Hello, everyone, and welcome to the MVP Virtual Conference. My name is Steve Guggenheimer. Most people call me Googs. I manage the developer and IT pro outreach here at Microsoft, and I couldn't be more pleased to kick off the event for the next 2 days. I'll be your only Microsoft speaker, so I appreciate you giving me that opportunity, and couldn't be a better time for this event. We're coming just off of our annual Build Conference for developers, our Ignite Conference, which is across developer and IT pro, and there's just a ton of news and information that's been coming out. Now, this is a great event because it's community-led. I am the only Microsoft speaker, and the rest is all led by our MVPs, and I love that. Microsoft has been, you know, built as a company working with partners. As you'll note from Satya here, we will always be partner-led. So the community is just an incredible part of what we do, and it's leadership in the community that actually is bringing this event to you and making it happen. We've done some online events for sure, lots of them. We've done some community events. We've even done some online community events, but none at this scale. And timing, again, couldn't be better coming out of Build and Ignite, and having the community lead the discussion, to me, that's what really brings us to life. I'm pretty pleased that our MVPs, our Microsoft professionals, most valuable professionals, are going to be hosting this. These are community leaders of the incredibly large number of people in the communities around the world. There's only 4,000 that are in this particular area, the most valuable professionals. They live and breathe the technology. They do this for their own passion. They do this because they want to share, they want to help others grow. Whenever I've met with them and talked with them, it's always been around their ability to give back. They've gained from the community, they gained from being part of the community, and their ability to give back in areas that they have passion and knowledge for and help others, that's what this is all about. And so really, in a lot of ways, taking all the things that I'll say we've been doing and talking about, and then having it represented by people who are experts in the area and passionate, and not Microsoft, but people who live and breathe technology across lots of companies but are experts in this area, to me that means a lot, and I couldn't be more pleased. Here's a set of quotes from the partners around why they do this, and I think it again speaks to passion for the technology, learning from and giving back to the community, being experts in the space and learning from others, and so this is a really sort of unique event. Unlike almost all of the other events that we run or host, It's not led by the Microsoft team or speakers. We just help coordinate. I'm coming to you from our Channel 9 studios. Others in this event will either be coming to you from a studio in their own home or wherever they are around the world, a few from on campus here where we'll lend out our facilities. But it's nice to have folks wanting to give back. It's nice to have the MVPs and the experts in their areas, you know, running this. And so my small role in all of this is to give you sort of an update on the company overall, on the things that we talked about across Build and Ignite, primarily Build. I spent a lot of time there, and so I want to use that. That's where we did most of our news, and pull that underneath the umbrella of the company overall. So with that, why don't we change topics and head into the conversations from Build and from Ignite, and let me walk you through an update on the company overall, the areas that we're focused on, some of the news that came from the conference, and some of the things I think that you'll find interesting and that our MVPs will be digging into. Build is our annual conference for developers. We've held it in San Francisco the last few years. Ignite was in Chicago. And Build is sort of an incredible opportunity to bring together the technologies that we're working on, in particular for developers and the developer audience. And then Ignite extends that into developers and IT professionals. Build is really around a conversation. The things that we hear about in our interaction with developers on a regular basis, along with the things we're building, and then extending that conversation between both what we hear and what we're working on and how to bring that together. I think the thing that's important as a starting point is, look, we all know that the world we live in continues to get sort of more complicated, and at the same time there's more opportunity. There's incredible changes going on the technology side, and we live in a world today that's not all or nothing. There's the cloud back end, and you can think of infrastructure as a service or platform as a service. We provide capabilities there through Azure. Google and Amazon provide capabilities there. There are many software as a service offerings. We provide some, lots of other folks, whether it's, you know, Dropbox or SAP or others, you know, provide services there, Salesforce. And then on the devices side, obviously we build the Windows family of devices and the Windows platform, but there are other devices that people build for on the iOS side and the Android side. And so I think the notion of sort of an all or none conversation is pretty much gone. And the real thing we work on is finding points of opportunity in working with our partners and developers to help everyone be better together. And so you'll find that the company is really looking to build bridges and find places where we can meet developers where they are today, and then enable innovation on our platforms, whether that's a device conversation and a client conversation, whether it's a SaaS conversation, whether it's a cloud backend conversation. We want to, again, meet developers where they are, recognize the world is complicated, help them reuse as much of their existing assets as forward, and then deliver on the business value propositions or the business things that they are trying to accomplish through the code they write. So that's where we're, you know, that's the kickoff for any conversation, is it's not an all or nothing world. We live in a complex space, and we want to help developers do more with what they have and be able to build on top of the things we're doing in a way that's win-win. Now, in light of that, the areas that we spend energy on a company, first off, is at a broadest level, empowering every business and every individual and every organization ultimately across the planet to do more. We want to just help people do more through technology, and you see that in terms of software being an integral part of almost everybody's life today, both at a business level and at an individual level. And there's three areas we're really focused on. One is more personal computing, the notion that you have to go to a device to do computing or interact with it, or the notion of a computer. Computing is all around us today. It's in all the screens we come across in our car, at school, the television, the PC. The phone, embedded devices. So that notion of having the fabric of computing be something that we interact with all the time and be seamless for us is one area, and definitely making that personal. The second then is around sort of the reinvention of productivity and productivity for sort of today's world, and how people interact with technology for being more productive, which is not just a work statement. That could be a statement for students, for artists, for whatever part of life you're working on. And then last but not least, the creation of the intelligent cloud and sort of the cloud to power the back end for all of the things we're doing across the productivity side, across the more personal computing side, and across the solutions that people are building. So those are the areas that we focused on at Build and at Ignite. Those are the themes that you'll see throughout the things we're doing as a company. And then if I step back one level and say, okay, what is it that we actually build? In that area, we're really focused on four areas that we're investing in as a company. The first is a devices platform. You can think of that as Windows. That's a platform that works across all devices, from Raspberry Pi through phones, through PCs, through the Surface Hub, through HoloLens, and we'll spend some time on that. And then on top of the devices platform, we have a group that's building first-party devices. So that's the hardware we build ourselves. The corollary for that is we have our services platform. That's all the work we're doing on Azure. And then we have our first-party services. Things like Office 365 or Skype or Bing, OneDrive, etc. So we have a devices platform and a services platform, and we have first-party devices and first-party services. And what I thought I'd do is sort of walk you through each one of those areas, give a little update on some of the things we talked about at Build, and use that as the anchor or the starting point for the rest of the conference. With that, let's move into the first one, which is really around the devices platform. I think we should start there, which is really a Windows 10 conversation. So let's dive into the devices platform, and here's my London Tube underground version of how you create an operating system or bring an operating system family together. If you look at the Windows 7 timeframe, we actually had three different OSs or three different platforms, one for phones, one for game consoles, and one for PCs. In the Windows 8 timeframe, we started doing the first set of work to bring those together. And that's really about lining up the kernel, because we were running on different chipsets. So at that point, it was having the same kernel then across the phone chipset, across the PC chipset, and then in the case of Xbox One, putting a Windows 8 kernel into the box. So you essentially had two operating systems, one for games and one for apps. And so that got us the first part of the journey. It got us the kernel itself. It got us the driver model. Things like DirectX and IE were the same. And if you were building an app, about 30% of the APIs were the same, but the app still had a lot of differences. Then last summer, in the Windows 8.1 timeframe, we brought together phone and PC and did the next level of work, which is really taking all the surrounding services and bringing those together. And that's things like, you know, having the same notification service across the same platform, or the same controls in the UI, or for the user experience. It's about packaging the app up and putting it in the store in the same way. So in the Windows 8.1 timeframe, at least across phone, sort of tablet and PC, you got to about 90% of the APIs were the same. And if you went into Visual Studio and opened a Universal Project, you could actually create one experience across both those devices. With Windows 10, we really complete the journey. And that means bringing all all of the platforms together across phone, PC, Xbox One, taking new platforms like the HoloLens or other devices that we're building like the Surface Hub and making those all part of the same platform. So now when we think about Windows 10, we think about one platform and therefore one experience is for a developer as you're building an app across all of the devices. Of course, you'll build the user experience in a different way for the different size screens, that makes sense. But the core of the app itself, the controls, the way you package the app and put it in the store, all of the different services that support it, all of that is now the same. And that scales from Raspberry Pi all the way up to the Surface Hub through phones and tablets and two-in-ones and PCs. And even the HoloLens now is built on that same platform. So the really incredible thing here now is for developers, as you think about building an experience, when you build an experience, it'll run across all the devices. And of course, you can take advantage of the different hardware capabilities of different devices. So whether that's inking on a Surface device, whether it's taking advantage of the Kinect sensor on an Xbox One, you have the ability to take advantage of all the different hardware capabilities as you choose, but have the core of the app be essentially the same. And again, even things like HoloLens are built off that same Windows 10 platform. That's fairly unique in the industry. No one else has gotten there. And for us, it's been a lot of work, but at the same time, it's a lot about paying attention to the details. It really is about allowing a developer to create an experience that bridges across all of the devices. And at the same time, then, you can think about the base then as an aggregate of all of the users. So when you create an app or an experience, it can be used on all the devices. So instead of having a conversation about the phone and the phone volume or the tablet volume or the PC and the PC volume or the Xbox, we just have a conversation about the family of Windows devices. And I'll come back to that in a second. But that's sort of a big step forward. And we spent a lot of time at Build demonstrating the ability to write apps in this fashion. We actually created one from the ground up, showed what other partners are doing. So step one is the ability, obviously, to create that universal experience, universal Windows app, create an experience across the universal Windows platform. The second thing is to bring it all together in the store. And so now we'll have a single store. We've done a ton of learning. There's a ton of telemetry on how to set up the store, how to make it easy for people to find things, giving developers the ability to have rights shared across devices. So if I download an app on one device, what rights do I get on the other device? What if I purchase things? How does the purchasing work? Building in all the mechanisms for that. And then going above and beyond, adding things like carrier billing, not just now to the phone platform, but enabling it on the PC platform. So if people want to use their phone and their phone billing for paying for apps or experiences, we can do that. There's things we're doing for in-app advertising and videos and other work going on to not just make it easy to get the apps into the store, have the store span all devices, but make it easier for a user to find apps. We actually spent some time showing how we're using the operating system to help users find apps that would be interesting to them, using the start button and some of the new start menu capabilities, using Cortana to help people discover the apps that are available on the platform and then take advantage of those apps, make it be a great experience, integrate them with things like Cortana. So there's a really rich canvas for developers, not just in terms of creating the experience, but making it easier for users to find that experience and then taking advantage of it across all the devices. And then, of course, enabling monetization in new ways and expanded ways where that makes sense. Now, obviously, there's a lot of line of business developers out there. So the second thing we talked about was the creation of a Windows Store for business. And whether that's things we do for small business or for the enterprise, allowing line of business applications to also be found, enabling purchasing models that make sense for line of business applications, things like volume licensing, things like paying through POs, etc. So enabling not just the consumer side of a store, but the business side as well was one of the other conversations. So the other piece that we spent a good amount of time on was the fact that our goal here is to aggressively move the base forward. We have a broad set of Windows 7 devices that are out on the planet today. We have a broad set of Windows 8 devices. We have phones. We have Xbox One. And we're going to move quickly to bring as much of the base forward as we can, as quickly as we can. So Xbox One is reasonably easy to do. We manage those devices, so they're easy to upgrade. With phones, we'll work with the operators and get those moved. And then with a broad set of PCs that are out there, we've offered a free upgrade for the first year. We're going to help users upgrade their devices. We're going to make it easy for them. We're going to help notify them. So we have a goal of 1 billion devices, moving to Windows 10 in a reasonably short time frame. And so that's an important part of the work that we're doing, is bringing that base forward. So now we have the ability to create a universal experience, make it available in the store, and then we're going to move a large base of the users forward to bring all these things together and really create a great opportunity for developers who are building apps and experiences for any of the devices, but also in aggregate across all of the devices. So now we're talking about a broad base of users, single store, the ability to build an experience that runs across both. The last area that we spent some time on then was building bridges to the code that people have, because we want to help people get apps onto the platform as sort of quickly and easily as possible. And not everybody starts from the same point. Of course, all the apps that have been built for Windows today and the universal sort of Windows platform that was available in 8.1 and before will help move those forward. But then we also made a series of announcements around the bridges we're building to help people get onto the universal Windows platform, and then from the universal Windows platform into the Windows Store. And that means obviously continuing support for .NET and Win32. And so helping Win32 and existing .NET apps work their way into the store, create an ability to do that in a logical way. There's over 700,000, you know, Win32 apps out there today. Terry had an incredible stat on the number of people using traditional Win32 apps and .NET apps today. So we're going to make sure that there's a path for those apps to get into the store. A second key area is web. There's an incredible number of web experiences that are really outstanding on the PC today. And the ability to take a web experience and turn that into an application. So put it in the store, have a manifest for it, take advantage of the local APIs, whether it's things like live tiles or maybe the hardware like the camera, connect into other services. Kevin Gallo did a great job of taking Flight Simulator from the web and turning that into an application, then taking advantage of some of the APIs that a native application would take advantage of. So that's a really great bridge. We showed a couple of other experiences that with Shazam has done that work, RDO. So a lot of examples of people taking a web experience and then packaging it up and turning it into an application and making it available from the store so people can both discover it and you can have a richer experience. Now the two that I think got a lot of play because they were new, one was the ability to take an existing Android, Java C++ app and bring that into the store and build a bridge for that so that developers who have built apps in that way can again bring those into the store, be able to run them on the Windows platform for the phone and bring that to life. And then the third one, which I find incredibly interesting, is to take Objective-C apps or iOS apps and bring those in the store. And those we can actually take an Objective-C application, bring it into Visual Studio, and then recompile it for the Windows platform. And so it was an incredibly rich discussion. I think, you know, the seriousness that we have in terms of building bridges to where people are today, enabling them to come onto the Windows platform, being able then to take advantage of the Windows platform and the APIs there, and over time, as appropriate, move towards a universal Windows application, which means expanding to all of the platforms that are out there. I think that's a really great bridge into the system. It allows people to get on the platform much more quickly, take advantage of the code they have today, and then as that billion unit base continues to grow, as we continue to create new devices like HoloLens, like the Surface Hub, we'll create more areas or opportunities for those apps or those developers to extend then into the broader set of Windows devices and Windows offerings. So really, I thought a powerful story. We got great feedback from the developer community. We're doing things with the web. We're doing things in all these areas. We told some stories of some of the work going on there. Here's just a list of some of the partners we talked about at Build that are already, you know, planning for or already building for Windows 10. We showed off the Shazam, who have a web experience with native code built into it that they've turned into an application. Really good example. RDO was there. Salesforce.com was there. We talked about Candy Crush. There was the conversation around Twitter. Just a broad set of partners. And not just partners who are building apps, but tool vendors for the gaming area, folks like Unity and Cocoa. So there's great energy and momentum in this space. The Windows 10 conversation is a great conversation in terms of bringing experiences to the platform. And so I know you'll hear more about it. That's an area where I think the energy is great. I think we're doing some good work. I hope that everybody on this call, on this video has gone out and has downloaded the Insiders program and gotten access to the preview. And there'll be more to come. On that note, I'm going to switch gears. That's a term apparently I overuse, so I'm going to try not to overuse it in this conversation. But if all of that conversation is around the devices platform, we have an incredible ecosystem of people who build hardware. All of the original equipment manufacturers out there are traditional partners on the phone side, on the PC side. If you think of an HP, Dell, Lenovo, Toshiba, et cetera, there's just an incredible array, plus all the folks in every country who build them locally. One of the things that we've also made an investment in is building hardware ourselves in areas where we think we can bring to life the best of first-party hardware, or in this case, the best of the hardware and the software, to really show off the capabilities of the platform. That's how Xbox was born. It's actually how the keyboard mouse was born. The Nokia innovation on the camera side, there's a large amount of work there. Surface Pro was always about the best of what can you do with a tablet and a two-in-one with Windows, the best for inking and touch. So really showing off the marriage of hardware and software, while obviously knowing we have a broad ecosystem out there. There's been some fun work going on, and we showed some of the work going on across many of the devices. We shot off an incredible application on the Surface Pro itself. There was something called StaffPad, which was essentially an inking application for writing music. And it allowed somebody who is somebody who generates or creates music to use the inking, just like they would write on paper, to create music and bring it to life and sort of do it in a digital fashion. Really an incredible demo, and showing off that power and that capability. So that was a great way to show off the Surface Pro 3, and we had other demos for that. Obviously, HoloLens got a big reception. I'll come back to that. We showed off several of the Surface Hub devices, and so having an incredibly large, essentially, tablet or hub where you can take an app that was built for a standard Surface and then take it up to a large screen, have Skype integrated in the conversation or into the application, the ability to have two people inking and annotating and working together, the ability for it to be erased when you leave the room so there's nothing left behind and you're not pulling out your camera to take a picture of it. It's already stored in whatever file format you were using and available to everybody. We talked about the band and the release of the band SDK. So there's a whole broad set of areas where I think our first party hardware group is doing incredibly innovative and creative work across a wide range of categories that show off that marriage of hardware and software, that create new concepts or ideas. The band is a mixture of productivity, notifications along with fitness, does great on the heart rate, while at the same time letting you know if you've got a text message without having to pull your phone out or an appointment. Again, the Surface Hub is just an incredibly powerful tool for a conference room or for a meeting or for an entertainment area. So a lot of fun. We showed off a good number of devices there. Two things I wanted to highlight for you today. One was the notion of continuum. A lot of what we've been working on is, if you think about more personal computing, it's not sort of, let me do things for this device or let me do things for that device. It is a continuum of experiences that ranges from any device I walk up to, whether it's a holographic, HoloLens device, my phone, a tablet, a PC. And so we showed off continuum, which is the ability to take the phone, right, and then connect it to a monitor, a keyboard, and a mouse. And since it's the same platform, going back to that Windows 10 conversation, same platform, same OS, the same applications, you can actually hook the phone to a monitor, keyboard, and mouse, and use the keyboard and mouse now on the monitor, and use the phone as essentially the platform that you're working from. And so we showed some examples of opening up Office, my phone sitting over here, it's plugged in, and now I can edit an Office document or a spreadsheet, or I can look at my mail, or I can work just like I would in a normal office with a keyboard and mouse, in particular where I want to do editing or creation, and it works very seamlessly. So it's sort of this cool scenario where maybe I'm just going away for a day and I don't want to take my PC with me, or maybe I'm just going from one room to another, and as opposed to taking my PC with me all the time, there might be times where I just take my phone with me. Another example was the vacation scenario where allow the kids to watch a movie, plug the TV in at the hotel room, watch a movie from the phone, at the same time use the phone to quickly do some email or send some text or do something else. So that ability to have a continuum between the phone as a front end, but a larger monitor monitor and a keyboard and mouse so it works in two fashion. That's something only Windows can do. It got incredibly good feedback because it brings to life the notion of it's the same platform across all these devices. And so the apps run, and you can actually run an app so it fits and looks great on the phone, but that same app then can scale to a larger monitor and a keyboard and mouse just by plugging it in. Incredibly powerful idea, got good feedback. And then, of course, you know, the thing that gets incredible feedback is the HoloLens. And the first time we showed the HoloLens was in January, and I'm going to run a video for you. The thing that really resonated, I think, at Build was we went from showing HoloLens in terms of the first time, in terms of capability, what it is and what it does, to, in this case, starting to show third-party developers building applications or experiences for it. I'm going to show you a video from Trimble on the construction side, and they'll talk to you about how they're using it and how they bring it to life. We showed a medical sort of doctor scenario and teaching scenario on stage. We showed off an end user scenario. So we went that next level from, wow, you know, it's just cool, to, hey, here's how developers are starting to think about building experiences for it. And we showed a couple different scenarios. And then we actually had hands-on for the entire 3 days. We had some one-on-one hands-on. We had some one-to-many. We even had an academy where people were starting to learn about HoloLens and actually coding for it, the UI gestures that it comes with, and then the fact that it builds on Windows 10, just what to think about in terms of your experience, because by definition, the app already runs if it's a Windows 10 app, so what can you do on top of that? So an incredible week for HoloLens, incredible week on the hardware side. Let me go ahead and run this video, and then we'll come back.
Microsoft HoloLens is a head-mounted, self-contained computer that lets you see holograms in the real world.
You get the physical model as a focus point for the team to collaborate around. And you get the hologram with the flexibility, with the ability to run quick iterations.
You'll see how we've brought in the courtyard that you suggested. You see that mouse go off the screen and into holographic space, and you're then interacting with the hologram with the mouse.
The thing that we can do for architects is really give them much higher confidence around decision making. One way we can do that is we can allow them to literally immerse themselves in the scene that they're building and see street side how the building's going to look.
Visualizing design data in the context of the real environment is a much better way to make sure that the design is implemented correctly on site.
Microsoft HoloLens allows you to collaborate with somebody regardless of distance, like they were there.
Hello there.
Hey, Igor. Where they're trying to put this door, there's a beam behind here.
I'm looking at this beam. We're interacting with it about a problem that we can see, and being able to solve that problem with all the data that we need in front of us in real time.
All right, I hope you liked that video. I can't wait for everybody to get a chance to play with the HoloLens. It is an incredible piece of technology. And I, you know, for one, as even someone who's been here over 20 years and seen lots of changes in the industry, I still get incredibly excited when I have the opportunity to play with that device. And if you haven't watched the video from Build of the day one keynote, if you watch nothing else, go to the end and watch Alex Kipman and his folks show off several other experiences that they're working on for that. I want to head into a different area. We've talked about the devices platform and first-party devices. I want to switch and talk about, you know, our first-party services and our services platform. I'm actually going to start with first-party services because in many ways that's the impetus towards the services platform. This is an area we've actually been working on for a long time. You know, when people talk about software as a service and the work going on in this area, we have a lot of assets here. I think our first foray into this space was the acquisition of Hotmail. I think that was about 1997. We've made acquisitions of software as a service. You know, Hotmail was one, Skype and Yammer. We've built things from the ground up. Think about Xbox Live from the ground up. Bing has got, you know, mostly built from the ground up. Certain pieces we acquired, but most of that's building from the ground up. OneDrive, built from the ground up. And then we have actual services where they started as packaged software, traditional, buy it in the store in a box or buy it as a company in volume licensing, and then turn it into a software as a service offering, which is Office 365. And there's incredible momentum across all of these. Office 365 has 50 million users today. You can look at the minutes here for Skype, Bing, the incredible number of notifications, you know, Xbox Live, 400 million users of our mail service, 250 million users of OneDrive. When you add all of these services up, and there's, you know, an incredible set of these things, we end up being the second largest end user service, you know, services provider on the planet. And what that means is we have incredible scale. And the reason that's important is for two reasons. One, it's a great platform for developers, but two, when you think about building a platform, which we'll get to, you have to have a reason to put in all the infrastructure for the platform itself, and the reason to put in that infrastructure is because you're running these services at scale. And third, which isn't crazy, is it teaches you a lot about how to run services at scale, which is critically important. So this set of services provides multiple avenues for us as a company, and not just for our end users, but for us to learn from, to build on, and actually help us create a better platform and a better experience. Here's a couple more statistics on the company and services. I'm going to pop over to the platform side. The nice thing about the services is when they get large enough and at scale, there's a certain set of APIs from the services themselves that are interesting to people. So whether it's the maps that come out of Bing that people want to take advantage of, I get a lot of requests for Skype to be, the ability to embed Skype into an application, have a set of APIs for that as a service. Xbox Live, incredibly cool. And one of the things I didn't talk about on the Windows 10 side is for gaming, we're going to make the Xbox Live service now open it up with a set of APIs so across, you know, PCs, tablets, phones, the Xbox itself, developers can connect into Xbox Live. And now that service is a sort of front-end service that developers can hook into. And so again, these line of business services or these end user services become great endpoints for developers to connect to. One of the most popular on the commercial side is Office 365. For a long time, Office was or still is a great front-end or connection point for line of business applications. If you're doing, you know, some type of order, payments, processing, connecting into Word or Excel makes sense. Lots of people connect into calendaring for scheduling, think of the dentist office or the doctor's office, email connection to CRM, etc. So Office 365 as a set of APIs is incredibly interesting to a broad set of developers. And we've just gotten to the point where we have our APIs out there. We've actually done a better job making them easier to work with. And so now we're starting to see more and more partners build on top of Office 365. It was the driver for the first conversation with Salesforce in many ways, and that first part of that partnership, which we're now expanding on all sides. We just announced a partnership with NetSuite. So there's lots of partners who look at that Office 365 as a great front-end. DocuSign was one we talked about. And so you'll start to see more of that. And one of the interesting parts that came out at Build this year was the Office Graph. If you think about Office and having that set of APIs, traditionally we think about social graphs, which is the ability, for example, on Facebook to connect people with pictures and other people and have this great social graph. Well, Office has an incredibly rich graph of users, things like calendar items, documents, information. And so Office has this very, very rich graph, which we're now allowing people to program in against. And so not only is the Office have a great front end for a line of business application, but the graph itself or the content behind it allows for incredibly rich connections. And we did a demo on stage of an ERP solution connecting into the Office graph to connect in ERP content along with Office content and, you know, manager information and AD and pull it together. So the services as a whole, incredibly rich area. Office 365, in particular around line of business applications and the Office Graph, is getting richer and richer as a front end or a connection point for line of business applications. We're seeing some real interest on the consumer side on things like Xbox Live, and then things like Skype bridge both. So the end user services give us incredible scale, incredible connection with end users, and create some phenomenal touch points or connection points for working with developers in the building of experiences for both consumer end users and commercial or business end users. Now, that also provides us a bridge into the platform side of the conversation. So the last area I wanted to go into was Azure and the platform itself. So I love the conversation around Azure and the cloud. It's just incredibly rich. We've made progress. I was involved 7-8 years ago now when we first kicked this off. And let's start off with that scale conversation. You know, at the time we had a rich set of end user services that were available. We thought about how do we bring those together. We also had this rich set of on-premises server offerings, Windows Server, Exchange Server, SQL Server, etc. So the idea was to obviously bring the platform together for our own end user services and build that out. And at the same time, we had the idea to make sure we had symmetry between the cloud offering or the cloud platform we were building with Azure and our on-premises server. And why? Well, over time, what you want to be able to do is for anybody who's an existing business or has existing applications, you want to be able to have symmetry so you can build an experience or an application that runs on-premises, it runs in the cloud, you can go back and forth, you can scale through the cloud, you can decide you want to, you know, for example, keep, you know, data behind the firewall if you want to for security, but at the same time be able to run compute outside in the cloud. And so that ability to have symmetry and allow people to migrate to the cloud at their own speed and the way they want to is an incredibly powerful capability, and no one else has it. You obviously have folks who are, you know, born in the cloud and have built for cloud first, but they have none of that, you know, on-premises history or on-premises capability. So one of the things we worked on was that cloud to on-premises symmetry, or hybrid cloud as people talk about it. And then of course we've been working on scale or hyperscale really. One of the things that's gone on is as our end user services grow and as they scale over the, you know, around the world, we're continuing to scale up our data centers, and now that's become the engine for Azure. We're in 19 areas around the world. That's more than you know Google and Amazon combined in terms of the areas they're in. And when we say we're in an area, that's, you know, not just a data center, that's, you know, typically two data centers in case something happens from an earthquake perspective or another perspective. Those data centers, it's not just a single building, it's typically, you know, 8 to 9 buildings. Each one of those buildings is typically the size of two pitches, whether it's a rugby pitch, a soccer pitch, football pitch, pick your terminology, or football or football pitch. So they're incredibly large, you know, areas that host a huge set of cloud server infrastructure, essentially for the cloud. And having 19 of those around the world, you know, we're in places where other folks aren't. Obviously, that makes a difference for performance. It makes a difference for scale. It makes a difference for you know, ultimately the cost and the scalability and things like having data sovereignty. So there's an incredibly rich basis that starts from those end user services that allows us to think about, you know, putting in the CapEx to build the data centers, and then having the data center scale as a combination of serving our own first-party services, but now serving all of the developers around the world and IT professionals who are building on top of it. So that's the starting point. And the second thing is once we've had sort of Azure up and running for a while and working on both infrastructure as a service and platform as a service, boy, once that engine gets going, you can really innovate on top of it. And we've had an incredible year in terms of just building new capabilities on top of the platform. We added over 500 new services in the last 12 months, more than I could ever talk about. I think across the 2 days, you'll see a bunch of them. One of the ones we highlighted at Build that I think connects back into all the other conversations is the app service. This is a new service that essentially allows you to build the back end for applications that run across devices, and it doesn't matter whether it's sort of a web app, an API app, you know, a traditional mobile application. So there's all different types of apps out there, and with Azure App Services, you can have a back end that supports whatever type of app you're building across the broad range of devices you're going to support, iOS, Android, and Windows, and do it in a fashion that makes it really easy to work with, really easy to scale. We get great feedback on the service. We had sort of pieces of it before, but we brought it all together. Incredibly powerful, and again, one of the 500 we announced in the last year. I get great feedback on Azure. There's so many places to start, whether it's infrastructure as a service, and you know, the fact that 25% of the virtual machines in Azure today are on Linux, and the partnerships we have there, the platform as a service side, we have incredible horizontal services that you can work with us on. Identity is a great one on the commercial side. you know, most commercial entities are not going to use Facebook or use identity from other providers on the consumer side. They have Active Directory in today. The ability to use Azure AD to make it easy to connect just seems logical. Media services on the consumer side, it's what we use with the Super Bowl and the Olympics, so, you know, very broad scale media services. There's machine learning services, Power BI services, you know, I talked about identity, there's storage. So there's an incredible set of services that are horizontal. And you don't have to, again, it's not all or nothing. You can pick one or two or many or all and work with us and work with other cloud providers. And it's interesting because I think some of the partnerships we're starting to see, whether it's traditional commercial partners like, who wouldn't have been a partner like an Oracle or an IBM or an SAP is one set of conversations. But then you see a Cloudera, a Docker, DataStax. We showed Mesosphere, at the conference working with us, container side and then, data side. So that's pretty interesting. And then you see folks like Salesforce, starting with the office. So you see that cloud has an incredibly rich opportunity for partnering. It has a lot of entry points. It's not all or nothing. And we're seeing great momentum as a result of that. You see some of the stats here, the number of new databases and new customers, the number of Visual Studio users, ISVs working on it. Again, incredible momentum, incredibly rich canvas for conversation. This is one where I think the MVPs will dive into lots of different areas, and I thank them for that because it's more than most people can absorb in a single day or conversation or area. You want to pick your points to dive in, but there's always a great place to start. I know that. One of the other conversations we went deep on at Build and at Ignite as well was the data side of this. We've talked about the client side with Windows 10 and the broad set of devices, Windows and beyond. We've talked about the software as a service side. We've talked a little bit about Azure and some of the services. The thing that glues all this together is data. And if ever there was an area that we're seeing incredible growth in, it's the creation of more data. And obviously there was analog devices creating data to start with, and then you see sort of digital devices, then mobile, and now we have the whole range of IoT devices. And so you have more and more processors on the planet generating more and more data, and you just see the amount of data in the cloud continuing to grow. And we spent a decent amount of time at Build and Ignite talking about the work we're doing for data in the cloud, and that's both the sort of security for data, row level security, column level security, and the performance for doing secure transactions and some of the work we're doing there. It's scaling up data, data warehousing capability. We talked about the data lake, which is the ability to mix, obviously, multiple data types together, petabyte-sized data formats. And then the analysis on top of the data, anything from real-time analytics to machine learning to predictive analytics to tools for looking at the data with the Power BI, data insights, working with Hadoop. We had the we talked a lot about R as a language for working with data and data sciences. An incredible conversation from Joseph Sarosh on both streaming analytics, real-time analytics, as well as predictive analytics. He did some great case studies and examples. And so this is a field where there's tons of new work going on. I think there's some real interesting work on security because we're going to have data in the cloud. Having security, that's an incredible area. But then I often hear people talk about data as a platform. People have lots of data. Data as a platform isn't that interesting unless you can do something with it. And so the set of tools being created to both scale up data, but then being able to do something with the data, be able to analyze it either in real time or actually looking forward in a predictive manner, and ultimately I think a prescriptive manner, is starting to happen. And so that was a very broad set of conversations. Again, I think the MVPs will walk through a chunk of that today. Let me show you one video around data that came from the conference, and it's just one of the many many areas that you can dig into.
Now more than ever, it seems like just about everything is a data point. So how do you analyze and act on it fast enough to get a competitive edge without needing specific expertise and lots of money for development and deployment? Microsoft introduces Azure Stream Analytics, fully managed real-time analytics that's easy to deploy and simple to develop. A low-cost end-to-end event stream processing solution that scales up rapidly with cloud capability to empower business decision-making. Azure Stream Analytics is fully equipped to interpret and react to all the data using fewer lines of code, all thanks to a robust SQL-based processing language that's also able to aggregate multiple streams of data. All a developer has to do is describe the desired transformation, and the service does the rest. Azure Stream Analytics, together with Azure Event Hubs, can process millions of events ingested in real time, performing analytics on multiple continuous streams of data. And these streams can be combined with reference data, leading to insights that can power dashboards or trigger alerts that drive real-time action. Azure Stream Analytics also offers you mission-critical reliability. Even in instances with extreme amounts of data, Azure Stream Analytics is designed with high loads in mind, guaranteed not to lose events or generate incorrect output. And business continuity is guaranteed with 99.9% uptime, auto recovery from failures, and built-in monitoring for fast recovery. Most importantly, thanks to the elasticity of the cloud, you've got the resources and architecture to easily scale up or down. So no matter how fast data grows and moves, Azure Stream Analytics is the ultimate tool to help you wrangle it all into continuous real-time insights to drive smarter decisions and actions. When you have this much data at your fingertips, who knows where it can lead you next?
All right, coming out of that video, again, there's just some incredibly fun things that we did on that. Joseph's talk in particular, this thing went viral, howold.net, and I forgot what the stats were, but I think it pretty much shut down Twitter. My wife found it on Facebook. You should go play with it. And it shows you that with the tools that we make available, you can create these very straightforward or in some ways easy APIs that do some incredible things. In this case, it's mapping people to age. I took my picture that I use off of the web, and you see I ended up being 51 in this case, which isn't too far off. It's actually about right by about 1 year off only. So this was super viral. Joseph told a story on sort of using machine learning and pedometers on cows all around farming and breeding of cows, which you should watch. It's quite entertaining. And the theme for next year is more cow versus more cowbell. So lots of good stuff there. Data's good. Make sure and dig in on the machine learning if you get a chance. Go play with this if you get a chance. All of this actually led to an announcement around something called Project Oxford, where the work we're doing now in terms of machine learning across areas like this was photo identification, but text identification, speech identification, being able to find patterns of information and being able to analyze and synthesize that. All of the work we do on Cortana for speech recognition, all of that can be applied in a logical fashion to other types of speech and voice. Written text is the same. Pictures are the same. So Project Oxford now is bringing to life a set of APIs for developers to use that allow you to whether it's filter or check or scan content and information on a service you build. Incredibly powerful, getting, again, very good feedback. People are very interested in this area. So the whole notion of data, scaling up data in the cloud, data of all types, structured and unstructured, being able to access that data, being able to secure that data, and then being able to analyze that data, very rich area. It crosses is sort of Azure and everything we've been doing with SQL, you know, across all the years and brings it to life. Now, one of the last things we spent a little of energy on, which I think brings us all together, is Visual Studio. We have a great tool set, a great IDE people have used for a long time. One of the things we announced and showed for the first time was actually Visual Studio Code. Not everybody wants to work in an IDE. Some folks just want to work in an editor that allows you to take advantage of, I'll say this, some of the strengths of Visual Studio, which allows you to do things like IntelliSense for when you're working with the code itself, being able to debug in line, obviously integration with Git. But one of the cool things is we showed the editor, this Visual Studio Code. We showed it, got ahead of myself here on slides. We showed that it was not only working on Windows, but we had it running on a Mac and we had it running on an Ubuntu machine on Linux. So pretty cool to have a Visual Studio Code editor available on all three platforms, and it's available today and it's free. Got good feedback on that. For anybody who likes working with Visual Studio, it likes debugging and IntelliSense and some of the other tools that are there. Great offering, good to see that hit the market, and got, again, good feedback. Sort of gone full circle. We talked about the devices platform with Windows and Windows 10 update. We talked about our first-party devices. We talked about our first-party services, and then we've talked about the first, the services platform, including the data side, and last but not least, tools. I want to end by just reminding everybody that look, we sort of live and breathe through partners. We appreciate the interaction we have with the community, the support we have from the community. We want to make sure we're doing a great job showing up. This is one of many community events. I love this one. We're going to get, I hope, a great response and great feedback, and everybody's going to enjoy it. We're also taking the content from Build, bringing it around the world. We're doing other types of events in conjunction with partners as we go around the world. And then we will literally be at thousands of events around the world, events that we host, but also events that the community's hosting. So our technical evangelists, our team around the world are out there. They're looking for opportunities to engage with the community. We want to make sure we show up in a great way, and we're here to support you, and just as importantly, we're incredibly thankful for our community members, in particular the MVPs, who are not only great advocates and understanders of deep areas of technology, but they understand our technology and are passionate about bringing that to you and to others, and sharing what they know, and being, I'll say, very good and balanced representatives of what's going on in the world, and then what we have to offer, and again, looking for those bridges to work together. So with that, I wish you guys a great conference. I appreciate the time. Have fun. Let us know how this goes. We want this to be both a virtual and a viral conference. It's going to be live for the next 2 days, and of course, we'll record it and make the sessions available afterwards. So thanks, and have a great day.